Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers, and I hope you're all doing well. Today's episode is both a new wrinkle and a bit of a throwback. I am being interviewed by Beth Martin, which is something that we don't feature often here on Base Camp with me on the other side of the interview. Yet it is also a throwback to earlier days here as Beth and I get into men's work, male initiation, the archetypal hero, and why the journey of the soul is so important for humans. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did.
Hello, Tony. Welcome.
Thank you, Beth. It's good to be with you.
Yeah. Nice to have you here. And so for those here who are listening that might not be familiar with your work, I'm just going to say a little bit about what you shared with me. So Tony Rizak is an author, thought leader in the arena of healthy masculinity, right up my king hero alley, and creator and host of the long-running podcast Base Camp for Men that I was recently on. Maybe we could share a link. I don't know if you have one to the podcast of mine. Originally conceived as a show to assist men, the show has evolved to include mythic themes that are pro-humanity and pro-freedom. That's right up our alley. Tony's fond of saying, every chapter of your hero's journey will require a slightly different version of yourself. He believes that all of us are sharing and contributing to this mythic journey we are on. Tony went through the Mankind Project's New Warrior Training in 2004. He's led and participated in men's groups ever since. And he's known as a compassionate and skilled facilitator and for his commitment to the personal development of men. Tony's the author of the 2014 book Body and Soul, The Essential Handbook for Men, a collection of essays about healthy masculinity and finding your life purpose. So we had a lot in common.
Yes, for sure.
To speak about. We had a fantastic conversation. So if you do have a link, then I can check that out. And there's a private chat here on StreamYard that you could share that in. And whenever you're ready, if there's anything else you want to share about yourself, maybe what's currently up for you right now, and then we'll jump in and start with some questions.
Yeah. Well, it's really good to be here, Beth. Our listeners of the show loved our episode. And, you know, whenever I get a chance to talk about archetypes, myth, I feel like those are really some of the best episodes that I've done over the years. Base Camp for Men, we're in our seventh season, but we have swung far and wide into all kinds of topics. I have a lot of different interests, and when I find patterns, I feel compelled to write and then get guests on to talk about whatever I'm finding. So whenever I get a chance to kind of go back, it feels like classic material that, just like myth itself and the archetypes themselves, if you take a little break and come back, the reading is different. You're different. Your speaking might be a bit different. What you get out of working with the archetypes is fresh. So whenever I get a chance to do what I consider to be kind of classic Base Camp for Men episodes, like the one you and I did, it always, it feels really great. It feels like a return, almost like maybe a band that's returning to, like, hey, we haven't played those great songs for a while. You know what I mean? And so, that's where I'm at. Just really feel, it's funny because I never had any kind of dream about being a podcaster. It was never on my radar. I knew who, like, Joe Rogan was, but I don't know. You and I talked about that a bit, it just kind of was divine intervention that I should be having a podcast that's going for so long. It was not something I felt like I was chosen for it, rather than me saying, oh God, I just really want to be a podcaster. It was like, well, let me try this out. I was offered the position and I was like, well, let me try it out and see. And then I found that I really, really love making content and speaking to humanity.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's beautiful. I wanted to jump in and share something. By the way, if you have a specific link to our podcast, that would be awesome. I don't know if I don't want to trouble you too much, but while you're doing that, I just wanted to talk about what you mentioned, very poignant, about archetypes being fresh. And even though you feel like you're going to play an old song again, it's not the same song. It's not, it's never the same song, and it's the same song.
Yeah.
Right. The two at the same time. So you get this wonderful paradox where you often find truth in those paradoxes that don't make sense to the mind, but they make perfect sense with the soul. And this is something that I never ever tired of of working with the archetypes and the hero's journey. I teach them year after year. I run a training where we go through them again, and I always say how it helps me be in the trenches with my students and my clients, because I also am called to go through a new level, a new layer of the same thing. So yeah, really, really great point. Really great point. And so what was it that inspired you to work with men in the first place? I would love to hear the backstory there.
Well, let's see. You know, I didn't know it at the time. When I was growing up, I grew up in a working class town, and sports were really big. And I grew up with brothers, and I was a jock, a dumb jock when I was a kid. I was not a reader. You know, books were, you know, something I had to do for school, but I really, you know, I got a lot of my soul, my young soul instructions out of being an athlete, where I was put in uncomfortable situations, whether that was on a football field or a baseball field, where it was nerve-wracking. You know, there was a pressure to see what you could do with people watching. And so that was my earliest sort of inclination of something where the activity or the teaching that I was involved in, I didn't know that it was shaping me at the time, but it was. So already as a young teenager, I was already gravitating towards getting out of my comfort zone. And having that edge instruct me. And then, you know, when I got older, my listeners know that men are not, there is no arrival by our society's norms of what is a man, really. There's no proper initiation. So that's why you have a situation where, I mean, you can have, I see it today, that you can have 30, 40, 50-year-old men that are still just playing video games with all their free time. There is no, they're not in mission. Maybe they work in technology. I'm being very general here, right? But maybe they work in technology, they make money, but there's no interest in being social, in getting out of their comfort zone to maybe meet a woman and start something that is going to be, that is going to further develop them as men, or another man, if that's the case. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, a straight guy that I'm talking about, right? But it's, they're comfortable in hiding in their rooms playing video games for hours on end, and that's the extent of it, even though they could be 35, 45, 55 years old. And when I got married to my wife, we moved to New York City for my wife to go to drama school. I was a body worker at the time, so I started a business there, and I was well in my 30s, and I just didn't feel like I had arrived yet. I'm like, what are the markers that will say that I'm now a man? I still feel like a young man or a boy, even though I'm 35 years old. And I had a good friend, Eric, who was going to these men's groups, and, you know, he had done the Mankind Project's New Warrior training, and I had heard about it. It scared me to think of doing it, right? Because I knew that I'd be way out of my comfort zone. And I asked him about it, and he told me a bit about it, enough to make me interested in it. And, you know, he brought me in. I ended up doing the weekend, which is this, you know, transformative 3-day retreat where men will go through 65 processes and a hero's journey, and go through processes with the four archetypes that they use. I know you use a bunch of different archetypes, but they use warrior, king, lover, magician. So those four, and then the whole thing is a hero's journey. So there's really five archetypes that they're plugging into. And it was just amazing to watch, you know, men going into shadow stuff, because when you grow up as a man in this nation, you're really taught to not talk about your shadow. So if you're heartbroken because your marriage is coming apart, if you've just been diagnosed with cancer, if you have lost a loved one, a parent or child, if you're feeling depressed, our society says men don't talk about those things. We are stoic. We suck it up. And so you can have this situation where men are 40, 50, 60 years old. They're suffering massively and they don't feel like they can talk about it. They don't feel like therapy is for them. They don't even feel like they can talk about it with their best friend. They go down to the bar to see their one friend, and they don't even mention that the doctor said you've got stage 3 or stage 4 cancer. They won't even say that to their best friend, because that's not what men do. And the Mankind Project was opposite. It wasn't emotional venting. It was very skilled watching the men that were on staff, how authentically they told the truth about their inner lives and their shadow, made your guard come down to the point where you're like, I can share that I don't have this figured out. I can share that I'm an addict or I have depression. And it's for every man there. So there's 80 men on that weekend. And the men that staff it, God bless them, they model it with courage and skill and non-judgmental energy and lover energy and king energy. And the men there, you can't really resist the attraction to lower your guard and speak the truth about your past, your fears, your grief. And it's the first time I'd ever seen men break down and cry. First time I'd ever seen men scream rage in a safe place because they were abused or because they were ignored or because something tragic happened and they never got a chance to get the lid off of their emotional life. And so for me, I took right to it and became kind of it's not about me, it's not about an ego that I became a leader, but it was natural for me to fall into teaching in groups, staffing, because I saw the impact and I saw that I could play a role in that. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. It's powerful. I just want to talk about emotions. This is a question that I've had open for some time. So I absolutely agree about the indoctrination that, for example, when I do release work or deprogramming, what I call deprogramming work with men, it is about 95% that they're going to have a lot more difficulty than the average woman. Now, it doesn't mean a woman won't have trouble. There are some that actually can't do it at this time.
Yeah.
And do you think that there's a natural side to that? Is there some way that nature has engineered men to have less access to their emotional life? Or do you think that's purely social engineering?
I think it's probably both. I mean, men, if you go back even 2 or 3 generations to my grandfather and great-grandfather, I mean, my great-grandfather immigrated here from a communist country by himself when he was 16. Probably not a lot of room to be processing grief over being lonely and scared. He had to be stoic and figure out the lay of the land. And he ended up being a very successful farmer with a huge family, right? It's a great American success story. And my other grandfather was in World War II and happened to be lucky enough to be ashore when his battleship was sunk at the Battle of Guadalcanal, where they lost everybody but the 6 of them that happened to be on leave. So he was not a great effusive emotional man either, because, and I think for men, it's a little in our DNA, and I see it in my own 18-year-old son, there is a stoic kind of DNA about men that I don't want to get into that unless I have to. But also, given the permission to go there, and when it's modeled, I think men can take to it. Men are very emotional. We're like canines, right? We're very emotional. We have this kind of canine energy. We pick up on things and we're more emotionally intelligent than we're given credit for. It's just that we're often watching the emotional fields of those around us and kind of navigating it. So I think it's both. I think we've been, it goes way back to when men were defending the village and fighting in wars. And I think whether or not men go off to war now, it's in our emotional makeup to sort of be stoic, but it's also, we have great potential in that. I've seen it a million times in men.
What an amazing answer. I love that. That's really, really articulate. And I fully agree, because it's easy to think, oh, men aren't emotional. It's actually opposite. It's not true at all. The sensitivity that I've seen in men has actually really taught me as a woman how to, you know, not kid glove or dance around. What's the expression? I can't think of it, but to just be aware that everything I do and say with my son or, you know, his dad, mm-hmm. or that it really does profoundly affect them. And it can be because of the stoicism from a woman's perspective, you can feel like, oh, they're impenetrable. I know I had this when I was at war with my own masculine, thinking it is like out there and not in here. I use this word, they're impenetrable. So what would I do? I would try to penetrate. And I would try to bring about, you know, the pain, and it's like awful. I have this podcast is a repentance for that, actually. And so, there's no lack of sensitivity at all. And I just wanted to chime in, because it's great that you know your family history. I find that is so incredibly helpful. And my great-grandfather witnessed, maybe I even talked about this on your podcast, but he witnessed the murder of his mother in Russia. It was just before the revolution. They were part of the pre-math with that, and their village was attacked. The women were raped and killed. The children were carried off, never to be seen again. And my grandfather was a survivor. So was his dad. So he didn't come over alone, but that became the deep, dark family secret. If it weren't for me telling everybody, I'd be like, it would, you know, still be swept under the rug. Luckily, I had an aunt who was also a survivor, great aunt, and she spilled the beans on her deathbed. She couldn't live with the horror that was in her. She couldn't die with it, I should say, actually. And so it does help. It's, you know, it doesn't change it, but it shows you there are some roots there. And emotions are kind of a luxury, right? It's the luxury of when you stop, right? This is almost always, say, when the crisis is over and things are quiet again and you have a few minutes to yourself, all of a sudden, boom, there it is. And what I've noticed, and I'm curious to see, you said a little bit about it, but what I've noticed is that we have the ability to suppress with a vengeance, like it's become a strange superpower to suppress, because of survival, because you need to just get through the moment and not die and have everybody around you not die, because you're the protector, you're the one that's responsible ultimately for everybody in your family. And so that mechanism of suppression, how do you, now I'll just say right out of the gate, and I apologize, it's contrarian right away, but I don't believe in creating safe spaces for people. Mm-hmm. Neither do I believe in creating unsafe spaces for people, right? So people always think that means the opposite. No, right. But it's not your responsibility as a facilitator, as a coach or whatever, you know, healer, counselor, whatever person that you've gone to see to make it safe for the emotions. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's the hero's journey. You have to venture into the pain and the destruction and the annihilation at the level of the soul. Everybody has to do it. If you don't do it, it doesn't get done, and you just have to do it over again. So what is it that makes your world the invitation to men to be able to unsuppress?
I think it goes back to what I said earlier, which is you have to model it. So you can't fake it. You can't talk about having full access to more parts of yourself, including the what's in the shadow. There's always great medicine, as you know, Beth. There's always great medicine in working with the shadow. Men in particular have not been taught that there's any gold there. And so I think that if they see other men modeling, and I think it's in particular, it's not to knock female women that facilitate men's stuff, but there's something about men modeling it for other men because they didn't see it. Chances are their mothers may have been very emotionally expressive. What's very likely is dad was very, didn't want to talk about anything, right? It's like, that's a common American dynamic, European dynamic, where dad was not at all effusive about his inner life. Nobody knew what the heck he was thinking about most things, right? So to see men that are not, and I think this is really important for men, when they see other men, I know when I saw other men modeling it for me and my respect for them went through the roof, I didn't think, oh, these guys are feminine. Not ever, not that there's anything wrong with being feminine, but I saw that it seemed like they were even taller, like there was something about their masculinity that was standing up straight, owning all the family stuff. And instead of just expressing, men are allowed to express excitement and anger. Everybody's used to that. The guy that's yelling for his football team, all that's fine. But when you start getting into the tender stuff like shame and sadness, even happiness is really considered kind of off limits to express, right? Even that feels edgy and dangerous. That's when I think that, you need facilitators, you need other men and women to model it in a way that's appreciative, that where it's seen as courageous. I think that's one of the things that the Mankind Project does really well is they put courage and emotional authenticity together so that men feel like I'm being heroic. I'm taking my hero's journey by talking about this absolutely heartbreaking thing that I've never said to anybody, and I'm actually sharing it with these 30 guys in this circle that I'm with for the first time ever. And then I'm being blessed by these men that I'm already looking up to, even though I've only known them for 2 days, because look at these guys, look at how powerful in their masculinity, not in a macho way, just in an authentically human, integrated, with lover energy and king energy. How can I not want to step into that? And then, so I think it's a combination of blessing the men for showing that much courage rather than it being like something that, the women only do that. Only women talk about their fears or their sadness or their trauma. And it's like, we kind of flip that and say, that is not the way it is. You've been duped or you've been conditioned to sort of say, talking about your emotions is what women do. And meanwhile, we're suffering all over the place because we can't talk about things. Does that make sense?
It really does. Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to echo that your experience has been my experience too. So I'll start by saying, one of the crimes that has been enacted, I'll say, I definitely was there, however I got there, was that you want men to be like women. Mm-hmm. So you're training them to, show their emotions, to talk about their problems, to all of that kind of thing. And it's really a very deep injury to them and especially if you have a powerful masculine side, which I did, very overblown masculine side. Mm-hmm. And I could bully a man into more, really sad, honestly.
Yeah.
And but what I've noticed with the men that I work with since I turned over my King Hero leaf, I guess, is that their risk, their ability to feel and express for their own sake, for their own healing, makes them more masculine,
mm-hmm.
not more feminine.
Yep.
At all. So this is a beautiful thing because that's what we need right now. We need them, and this is at risk of being a woman saying, where are all the men? And but it's the truth of it, right? So we're finding ourselves in a time when you know, things might start to shift a little bit now, but probably not so substantially. But we've been through a period historically where they tried to do away with men and women, right? Yeah. Like it became a crime to say you're a woman, or and they wanted to mute both the masculine and the feminine because of the incredible power between them. I just actually gave a talk called Marriage of the Opposites, which you can't not talk about the masculine feminine in that context. Yep. And I'm going to be sharing out that work much more intensely, just so people know there's a lot more. It's a huge subject. And so the, I don't know. Do you want to pick up on anything that I said there? I'm not sure.
No. Yeah. I mean, there's always going, I think one of the things that has happened without getting too political is that they have made, you know, however you want to define they have made it sound like we have to throw away thousands of years of common sense, biological reality. I mean, I was saying the whole time that people were shouting that there's no such thing as men and women. I'm like, we're part of the animal kingdom. Show me a giraffe that doesn't have a male and female. Show me a, you know, a monkey. Show me a zebra. Show me a human. You're just making things up. And there was this sense of, we all have to go along with this, but I don't think people were really ever that comfortable. I think it was being shouted by a small minority that had a lot of social media followers, and then it was being blasted out in legacy media. But they're not really big on telling the truth about a lot of things. So they were fine confusing people. I felt terrible for the parents whose kids got out in front of, I don't know if I'm a boy or a girl, and I don't, you know, because parents know more, a lot more now than they did even 5 years ago. The first wave got people blindsided to where they weren't sure. There's no such thing as a man. There's no such thing. You know, it's a birthing individual, not a woman, and all the nonsense. And, you know, we were just watching it going, well, the pendulum is got to swing back the other way, because the majority of people agree with what we're talking about here, that, you know, we can't throw away, you know, wisdom for some sort of trend with a weird agenda that we're not even quite maybe 100% sure about, you know? And so, yeah, I tried to stay out of those conversations, but I got pulled into it because of the way that my show runs, and I would have guests on, and we just like this, all of a sudden we would be into something. And, you know, my heart goes out to any person that any parents that have a young person that got swept up in a way where they feel like they lost their son or daughter. And I've interviewed people that had that happen. It's heartbreaking. And there was also plenty of, I remember seeing tomboy, you know, women that were like, God, thank God they didn't have this when I was growing up. Cause I was a tomboy with six brothers, and I was just trying to keep up with my brothers. And if you would have said, do you want to be a boy? I would have raised my hand and said, I do want to be a boy, not knowing anything that entails. And she goes, thank God I was, you know, able to just be a tomboy, try to keep up with my brothers, and then just grow into my next phase, you know? And she says, they're not really allowing for that. So that's a lot. And that's, I know that's political, and we're all trying to get along and figure out what's what, but yeah, that's where I land on it. I kind of on the common sense, biological reality end of things. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's very wise. You know, I was noticing I've got a billboard across the street from here, and it always changes based on the advertiser, right?
Yeah.
And so right now it says, make her sparkle. And I was thinking through it in my mind how, you know, so you get the propaganda and you get the big accounts and they're pushed, yeah, and it makes it look like everybody's agreeing with this all gender bending weirdness. Yeah. But the advertisers know if they put that billboard and said, made him sparkle with a diamond, it wouldn't work.
No.
It wouldn't make any money at all. No. Nope. It would be a big fat loss for them.
So yeah, zero. Yeah.
They have to support this traditional model in order to be in business. And and this is like what you're talking about, reality. Reality is my favorite. Yeah. I love reality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this was the beautiful thing I'll also say about having come on as strong as they did with the propaganda. What it did is it created the pendulum swing.
Yeah.
And so it created a whole new upcoming generation of men that value their masculinity and that they value women's femininity.
Yes.
And they stepped more into the role of wanting to provide and wanting to show up with a marriage proposal or, you know, a ring. Mm-hmm. Who cares about a ring? But to be in that traditional role, I'll say one more thing about my son. So, you know, he's been born and raised on social media, for better or for worse. He's 18 now, and he's always had access to that. Some people might criticize me, but it was my choice not to cloister him away. And all the weirdness also brought out a very strong, masculine, solid, confident, but not in a caricature way, not in a, like, he needs to display it. It just speaks for itself.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be more grateful for that, to have a naturally masculine son. And he woke himself up because of all the weirdness.
Yep.
Right. Yep. That makes no sense. And he developed his interests in all the very manly things.
We have the same kind of son at home. I have an 18-year-old. He's the same way. You know, we were really concerned about technology and what's he watching. And, you know, we're trying to give him his autonomy, knowing he's clicking on stuff. But him and his friends are all kind of common sense. You know, I think I could see them all with kids, and they're very masculine. They're very confident in themselves and in their skin. And it didn't shift them into some gender bending identity or confusion. And if anything, it solidified their inner sense of themselves, because there was so much fluidity that they were like, well, that's not what I am. I don't feel that fluid. I feel like I've got something about me that's different than what they're talking about there. So, yeah.
That's great. I think we were separated at birth or something. We might be siblings, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's so much in common. It's crazy.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So then here we go forward, right? It's crazier than ever these days. I actually, you know, from my perspective, I've been the only hill I'm willing to die on, if that makes sense. Like my work is the one I'm willing to stand for. And amazingly, there are some issues now that I also am willing to die on those hills. Mm-hmm. And I can't help myself. So this is one of them that where it comes to our food and our nutrition and our health and all of that kind of thing, how grossly psyoped it's been. And I'm not talking about mainstream. Yep. I'm talking alternative.
Yep.
So I almost died 25 years ago of the lymphoma that, by the way, people can search this at your podcast channel. This is the interview that we did. And so witnessing this, and I survived the cancer supernaturally through the archetype work, through the inner work, through the you know, but physically I have still had all these little things chasing me, and small breakdowns. And it's like, I need to actually solve this mystery, because I'm tired of my body making no sense. And somewhere, like, I have that tenacious gene where I'm going to go for the truth until the end, wherever the end is. And I think there's no end.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I happened to come across, shout out to Alex Zeck again, who's going to be on my podcast this coming week, if this comes out in time, which I think it will. He interviewed Dr. Garrett Smith of Nutrition Detective. And it was fascinating because it went against everything I'd ever learned about food and nutrition. And I didn't want to think about it, because it was threatening to turn my life inside out. And I didn't want to watch it a second time. Mm. And I didn't want to watch it a third time. And I didn't want to have him on my podcast, right? I had so much resistance. I didn't want it to be true. But lo and behold, there's so much truth there. I couldn't stand it. So I start putting the truth into practice. And for now 5 months, I turn my life inside out. I turn my fridge inside out. My preps are all useless to me almost always, except some good beans I managed to stash.
Yeah.
And so that whole world died, and I had to die. So maybe we're coming back to the hero's journey. There's a lot of death on the hero's journey. And it's by my own proof, and then by the proof of more than 2,000 people in his world, I'm seeing how the lies in the alternative world are bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The mainstream, it doesn't take very much because they're medicated. They're, you know, they just go along to get along and they do the thing. But us in this so-called alternative world, this is fascinating to me. People don't want to keep going. Mm-hmm. They don't want to keep digging the deeper truth. They love their fake heroes like RFK and, yeah, you know, Joe Rogan or Trump or all these like characters. Like you said, you don't want to get political. That's totally, yeah, fine. We don't need to go down those roads. But they're not willing to be the hero in their own journey and really, really dig down to the truth. So huge shout out to Dr. Garrett Smith. He is a guy who's growing in popularity and then growing in the attacks, right? Because as soon as you come out with the real deal thing, yeah, then they try to kill you. And so this I find fascinating. And to the degree that we are willing to die on this journey, mm-hmm, this is the measure of your uncontrollability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to share?
Well, yes. I like that you're bringing in that there is no, the layers of the deception are, you know, there's many, many layers. So I think the tendency when you start to come, if you're going to take a truther's path, which is a hero's journey, you're going to have rabbit holes that you go down where there's also misinformation. You're going to actually have rabbit holes that maybe you take and look at to see what the patterns are that have nothing to do with the truth whatsoever. So it takes great discernment, but just like Frodo making his way to Mordor, right? There's false information. There's people that you think might be allies that aren't. Ultimately, it's for you and your own awakening and humanity's own awakening. Right now, humanity is awakening. Every single day, people are waking up to they're lying to us, and who they are is not always who we think is we're pointing to. So they've done a great job of creating whatever this reality is that we're in. They've done a great job of creating an us versus them. And as soon as you integrate one, you know, bipolar, you know, tension, there's another one to grab you. So you never see that the whole thing, it could just be one divine being having this experience over and over again where, you know, they say, well, so the liberals think that Trump people are part of a cult, and the Trump people think that the liberals are all swallowing the mainstream media disinformation and outright lies. But also over in the Trump camp, there's information that's not 100% true or not true at all, right? And so the people are going to be waking up to, they've been lying to us about the money. They've been lying to us about all the what they've been doing with the money. That's coming out every day. They're saying, we're finding all this stuff that's, you know, they said one thing and that's not what they do with it at all. And I haven't seen the video that you're talking about. I'm going to go and I'm very interested by just the way that you teed it up. But there isn't one person. Trump's not saving everybody, and either is RFK. It's up to every single person to wake up to that, for lack of a better way of saying it, we've been swimming in lies and deception for so long. It's a little bit like the Matrix is a really good metaphor that we think that we're free because we can speak of freedom in America, all the while all of the systems have been built to enslave us and to keep us in the dark and to keep us from real. And even our quote unquote saviors end up being part of the whole kind of enslavement, right? And I'm not pointing fingers and saying that person's a bad person or that person's also a sociopath or whatever, however you want to categorize things. But ultimately, this is about us growing our discernment and our own relationship to the divine, however each one of us conceives the divine, whether that's God and Christ or goddess or universe, however you however you orient towards the divine, it's about each one of us figuring out, look, you know, I don't think they're telling us the truth about this. How do I know that? Because I trust, I've developed my discernment. I've developed my pineal gland over time so that when there's a lie or a false flag, or they say, this is happening, there's a part of my heart and my inner knowing that recognizes, oh, they're doing this again. I can tell because it has a frequency of deception. It has a frequency. It's kind of like, and I'm not telling your listeners whether or not they should take an experimental vaccine, right? That's up to each and every person. Trump said, everybody go get it. I'm like, I'm not getting it. I'm not comfortable with putting anything in my body, right? What? Yes.
We got to speak in code, jabs or pokies.
Okay. So I was not comfortable with that, not because of what I was reading, but my own inner knowing whispered, don't take that. Don't take that. It feels forced. And it was almost like the wrong people, the people that I already didn't really trust with their narrative, right, were the ones that were put out to like really say, everybody's got to do this and virtue signal and we're all in this together. And I just recognized it as like, that does not feel truthful at all. So I didn't. And then when people were like, well, you know, your president was saying to get it, I'm like, well, I'm not listening to him. I don't take health tips from him. I don't take health tips from Robert Kennedy. He doesn't know my health. I know my health and my family's health. We've done it. We've made a study of it and keep integrating things. So again, it's the hero's journey about, you know, who do I know in my inner circle that really understands and exemplifies vibrant health? That's who I want to have conversations with, not random bureaucrats that have been paid tons of money to have a particular stance about things. Does that make sense?
It really does.
Yeah.
Fascinating how they all became the health experts, and that never the case, right? Nope. They were just managing affairs, and it just was full on. And for those of us, I'll say likely you, that got in a little bit early, like pre, can I say, which euphemism should I use here? You guys know what I'm talking about, like
the pandemic
or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was predicted that it was going to be something health related. It was going to be about the injections. It was going to be about this, you know, so-called global thing, which it really actually in reality wasn't. But I wanted to go back to something that you said about the division and that bipolar tension. That's really speaking my language there. Mm-hmm. I just gave a talk on the marriage of opposites, as I mentioned. And so I've really studied, and I'm curious to hear what you think that, we have a certain hardwiring for opposition, meaning to have those two-poled positions. Mm-hmm. And it really is two poles. And very often on the other side of dissolving those opposites, you see, oh, those two poles don't even exist. Or there's a lot more nuance and a lot more you know, angles to this subject than I could have imagined. Yeah. And so, yes, they capitalize on our propensity for this internal opposition that, you know, I almost died of cancer because I was opposing myself, opposing my symptoms, which means suppressing them and keeping them down out of my awareness. And then, so I agree with you that like creating more division, say if we go for the war between the terrain people and the germ theory people, I'm sure you're aware of that one. Mm-hmm. And it's like an ongoing and people are championing for it and creating a lot of resources and every day saying the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. I'm like, I'm over it already. And then now here I am willing to go to war on things like, you know, the natural health community now promotes ivermectin and methylene blue and what is it, fembezadol? Mm-hmm.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And then I have a whole bunch of new haters now. Mm-hmm. And they swarmed, right? They came out of the woodwork. They're not even, say, on Fakebook. They're not even my friends. Or they are somebody that has never taken any interest in me whatsoever, but they have a huge audience and they promote the drugs and they probably sell the drugs and have affiliate links for the drugs. And so, yes, it's extremely divisive what I'm doing, but I, at the end of the day, would rather narrow my audience right down to those smart people who are not my own natural health food groups are promoting these very dangerous drugs.
Yeah.
And I can't sit back anymore. I'm trying to be as polite as I can, a little behind the scenes, not smashing them and calling them out. And but the division is real. So what's your take here?
Well, you know, if you're going to be a agent of truth, if your alignment is with truth and humanity, the bots are going to swarm on you. That's what they're there to do, is to get all over you. I think sometimes when I've been attacked, it's been when I've been the most over the target, in a way. Like, I'm speaking something, I don't want to say the word again, but I'm speaking something that might help humanity. And so I try to avoid... I try to stay in my lane. Like, somebody was pressing me on Israel and the Middle East, and I just like, look, I don't know enough about it. Every single thing I've read has either been, let's say, online in the New York Times or in the Wall Street Journal. Like, everything has been said 1,000 times. Like, I'm not adding anything to the conversation. My signal is what helps humanity right now. That is always what I go back to. What helps humanity? And I define humanity, the whole tribe, right? If you're somebody that is trying to reduce the population of humanity, or you're making lots of money prescribing things that are really not good for people, then I don't see you as an ally. I'm fine with the tension of having over there somebody that I'm like, I don't think that you really want humanity to thrive. Otherwise, you wouldn't be pushing this agenda on people. Mm-hmm. So I try to keep it as big as I can, where my tribe is humanity. And that cuts through whether you identify with this political party or that, or you're in the middle, or, you know, you really are pro, you know, or you are not. Like, those issues don't matter. I want humanity to thrive. And I feel like my role has been to help humanity with uncomfortable truths, right? And so I'm good with speaking uncomfortable truths and having maybe people go, oh, you're this, you're that. I'm kind of okay with it, because God wants me to fulfill my mission, which is, you know, please help humanity right now. There can't be enough people in their own small way with their little podcast speaking truth. You don't know how many people that's going to help. And so those are my marching orders. And I try not to get hung up. I used to name call certain things, and I don't want to do that as much right now, because I feel like the pendulum is swinging. People are waking up, and I feel like it can be off-putting if I'm a little sharp with my critique of some things. So I'm trying to find a more skillful way to navigate. I think I was a battler a few years ago when it felt like there wasn't enough people fighting for freedom, and I'm a lover of freedom, right? So for me, it was a principle thing. Now I feel like, okay, there's more momentum in the things that I was talking about. How do I skillfully manage this chapter of the hero's journey for both myself and for humanity, knowing again that it's going to take a different version? So I'm being asked to forgive both myself and others. I lost a bunch of friends during that period because of the way that I was speaking. It was difficult, as you know, if you're a private person and you just work, your views can be kept to yourself, and you don't need to post anything on social media. When you have a podcast, I have a microphone and I'm writing close to my heart. So my views become part of the public discussion, and they're out there for friends and former friends to click on and either go yay or roll their eyes or what happened to him. And so I just had to be you know, I had a, I think I told you this maybe off record that I went to a very dear friend of ours who was a skilled shaman, and she was renowned for decades. She did readings for people that were uncannily accurate about your life and what's unfolding in your hero's journey. And she did it in such a great way. And she died a few years ago, but the last thing she said to me, and this was before I ever wrote a book or had a podcast, she said, as I was leaving, she said, "Tony, you're going to come to a point in your life when you're going to have to choose between truth and your spiritual truth and your path and your friends." And there was this pause. And then she just looked at me with a twinkle in her eye and she said, "I know you'll choose wisely." And that's all she said. And I think about her today because I'm like, her name was Star. And I'm like, "Star, thank you for that gift." It reassured me when I was having my own dark night of the soul, because it's hard when you stand in your principles. And if you lose a bunch of friends, you can start to really second guess, like, well, you know, where are they going? Why are they deserting me in my hour of need? But it turns out it's not really your hour of need. It's your time to stand up in your principles and be a stand for the people that need to hear what you have to say about it.
I love all of that, what you just said. That's amazing. So one of the things that when I was traveling to Mexico, I started, you don't have a connection or anything. And I didn't travel with a book because I could only bring carry-on for the stupid travel thing. So I pulled my computer out and I started to write an article and identifying myself as an outlier among outliers.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah, I'm on the edge of the edge.
Yeah.
And for some reason, like you said, the marching orders, that I'm always willing to do that. Not everybody can withstand it. It is the rebel archetype in my world that allows you to have that kind of resilience with attacks. And there's a dark side to that as well. But it is that at the end of the day, I've lost friends. I've lost my whole entire family, except, you know, one and a half people that didn't turn on me, but still don't really want to be in my life or have a relationship with me. The cost has been extremely high. Like you say, you can get into that place of where is everybody for me in this place? But the satisfaction, you know, letting the identity go is very important, because I don't want to be this flag thing that I'm the outlier and I have to be, because then that becomes a whole ego identification, not healthy, not at all. But there's a rightness, like you said, about discrimination and about that muscle that you just keep on discerning, and you see what is the target here? Can we keep our eye on that?
Yeah.
And if I die alone and free, that will have been perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I don't want that. I'm not trying to make that happen.
Right.
But to meet people like you, this gives me great comfort. Mm-hmm. Right? And that God brings those souls together. There's somebody pointed me towards the book of Daniel. I don't know if you have if you spend any time in the hero's journey of the Bible. But apparently that's exactly the lesson that he kept, that God kept on saying, oh, you've got this huge following, make it smaller. Yeah. Oh, even smaller and smaller and even smaller, right? And we live in the opposite world where it's always, grow your audience, get your message out to more people, you know, all of that kind of thing. And I just see my world getting smaller, but richer.
Yeah.
And the quality of people around me is gold.
Yeah. That
when they're willing to stick with me and they're willing to be brave, by the way, I can't help myself and share Nutrition Detective, the YouTube, you know, they're some of them are brave enough to come along and at least check it out.
Yeah.
And pull back the curtain and see if there's something there for them or not. And I don't run after them. But if I don't speak my peace and my truth, then I don't get to be right with my creator.
Yes, that's it exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I would feel there's not much that would make me, like, if I passed away now, I would feel like I did my divine duty, but I also feel like there's more to do. This is such an interesting time to be alive because humanity is waking up from this weird dream of all the things that we thought were quote unquote real are turning out to be illusory, and they were built on lies. So there's no, they're like sandcastles as the tide of truth is coming in and just kind of wiping out all this stuff that people are like, I thought that was a really great mansion on the beach. Turns out it wasn't built of anything. And so, but the only thing that would have me be regretful, I think, at the end was to turn my back on what my divine mission is. That's the only thing. And now at this point, I've been following it for so long, I would get immediately called out by my wife and my inner circle of like, what's going on with you? Everything okay? You don't sound quite like you. You know what I mean? I think people now are attuned that they know what my stand is for with humanity. They know my heart. And if I'm not speaking from there, I think it would alert people that there's something wrong with me. You know what I mean? So so I have created a expectation that I will speak honestly in best I can, knowing that sometimes I don't have the facts right. I mean, you mentioned a video today that I haven't seen. You're like, it's jaw-dropping. So it's like, okay, well, there's more work to do to uncover what is going on right now and just to do my best to honestly and with authenticity and heart on sleeve report it to my tribe of listeners, which is, you know, humble tribe, but also I also feel like I report it in a way that I always think people could be clicking on this episode, Beth. They might click on it 20, 50 years from now and get something from it. That's how I do it. So when I record, I always say, yes, it may only be people listen to it for 6 months or a year, but what happens if it stays out there and it becomes something that's really valuable? God works in mysterious ways. What if our message becomes something that's really super important to a particular group, maybe not even in our country, just somewhere else where they're like, oh my God, this is exactly what I need to hear right now through my own hero's journey. And to keep mythically the themes that we're talking about, keep the archetypes and the myth alive in the speaking, I want to make sure that for me it creates a I like it when the stakes might be really high. That brings out the best in me. If I feel like I might be speaking to my great grandson or great granddaughter because she might click on Basecamp for Men or on this podcast, then I'm like, my sacred duty is, it's like, it's okay. You know, we're telling the truth today, you know, kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Very, very brilliant. And so I failed to get you to do my archetype quiz, or did you by any chance?
I have not. I would love to do it.
Okay, yeah. No doubt we'll end up with a part two at some point. And yeah. But I'm for sure reading some King on you. And that's a beautiful thing. There's a lot of pitfalls in that archetype, but I feel like you're taking it on in a very clean way. Mm-hmm. And are there ways that you work with men that you create spaces and groups for them, or how could they take you up on any of that stuff?
Well, I would say where the action really is on Basecamp for Men, even though it's gotten more broad, there's a lot of content, and certainly reaching out to me via the website and just saying, hey, would love to get plugged into stuff. I stepped away from doing men's groups, but I'm now part of a couple of them that other men lead, and it seems like I'm being asked to perhaps create again. I think during that period that we spoke about, it was getting a little bit odd that philosophically I was on one side and all of the men in my men's group were on another side of a couple of really divisive issues, and it just did not feel right. I did not want to have it be weird as the leader, and so I'm kind of at this point leaving it up to God as to where I'm being used, both for men's group and beyond. But anybody that is like, oh, I would love to get plugged into something that maybe he's a part of, we can certainly, you know, get our arms around somebody that's looking for a good men's group, because I know of a number of them that are running. And like I said, I may end up leading them again in the near future. Just depends on a number of things and messages I get from the divine.
That's great. And the best place to reach you from is your website or your podcast?
Yeah, I think the podcast is basecamp-podcast.com. But also, if you just type in basecampformen.com, you'll see a little bit more about me and how to reach me. And there's an email there. The podcast one is strictly, I'll type it in here. The podcast one is just all the episodes. So if you go to basecampformen.com, you will see much more of how to get a hold of me and all that.
Yeah, that networking is the most powerful thing, right? Sometimes it might seem like one person just hears this and knows they need to reach out to you and take advantage of the networking that you've already done, the creation of community, even if it's a community of two. It's sometimes enough for people to be able to, the shared burden is so much lighter. That step alone, never mind actual healing that can take place in that company. So I just thank you for doing what you're doing. I highly value it. I highly recommend your podcast. I highly recommend our conversation, as I mentioned, as well, that we talked about. And so thank you for joining, Tony. It's been a total pleasure.
Oh, it's always so good to connect with you, Beth, and have conversations. I feel like we could sit around the campfire and just keep going. So I look forward to future collaborations and having you back on the show as this unfolds. I would love to come back and with your archetype quiz and do something around that as well. So thanks again for having me.
Okay, you're very, very welcome.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I absolutely love sitting on the other side of the interview, especially when I get someone I really jive with like Beth. And if you like her stuff as much as I do, go subscribe to her excellent podcast, The King Hero's Journey. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.